back on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. A lot still to get to, including our goalie guru, Kevin Woodley, in just a moment. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest. Joins us every Wednesday, the goalie guru covering the Canucks at NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. It is Kevin Woodley, and he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. What's happening, Woodley?
I am very, very grateful for the White Rock Hyundai Tucson right about now. Let me tell you, with the weather being as it is, literally drove into the rink, Sunday morning as it was snowing, and had two cars spin out and end up in the median on Highway 99 between lanes in front of me. So nice to have that all-wheel drive power.
Doesn't hurt this time of year, especially when we get the one winter storm of the calendar year in Vancouver.
Yeah,
it's been
be prepared for the one.
Yes,
you got to be prepared for it, and you are.
We might still have one or two more little flurries at some point here.
Let's not talk about it.
You have to be prepared is nobody else is. That's what I witnessed.
What all-wheel drive winter tires? What are those things?
Yeah, it's a great sign of what would happen if end of times come, because nobody's prepared.
There was a guy in a bright orange, and I apologize if he happens to be a sports fan and listening to this, but there was a guy in a bright orange, brand new, done up, sporty Mustang, rear wheel drive, did not appear to be winter tires, although these days you can't tell, had really nice summer rims on it, doing 35 on Highway 99 when the snow really first started to hit on Sunday morning, and it was just what are you even doing out here?
If you don't have the car equipped to handle this kind of weather, just find another way or another means of transportation. That's all. All right, let's get into the Vancouver Canucks, who, as I said in the opening segment here, Woodley, it kind of feels like they've got a new coach bump going on with some of the new faces and just a wildly different energy around the team right now.
Yeah, and in the locker room too, right? And some of that is the excitement of the new guys and their sort of willingness to sort of hang around when the room opens and have conversations with different people. I noticed it at Morning Skate the other day. As much as I think the give us a number, put them at the front of the room, have a wall of cameras surround them approach to media relations creates a bit of an adversarial, it feels like a firing line at times. Mm-hmm. There's more guys hanging out in the room to just go have conversations with them. That hasn't been the case for large chunks of this season. It feels lighter in there. Maybe that's not fair. Maybe that's overanalyzing, and maybe that's just our interpretation of mm-hmm. it. We're obviously not in there when the doors are closed. There are select times that we're in there, but there is that feeling like a weight has been lifted. And in terms of how those guys play on the ice, like last night was kind of fun, no? Yeah. Forget the wins. And maybe it's a different game if one of the three posts is posting in instead of posting out in the first period. There was an entertainment value there. Even in Detroit, as much as that was a bit of a slog, and they were coming off a road trip, and Detroit was coming in on the second half of back-to-back, and both teams trying to shut it down, there was some energy, there was some mm-hmm. pace. Filip Hedl's been fun to watch. Engaged, takes pucks, plays with speed, takes them into danger areas, ties the game on Sunday doing that. It feels like a reset button, for lack of a better term. And with it, just a sort of a sense of renewal, both in the room and on the ice with the new group they have now.
Yeah, and we're all hoping that it is sustainable. And, Filip Hedl specifically, he's playing like a top-line player right now. He's been playing over 20 minutes in both games so far and has been absolutely dynamite. And, just as the entire team goes, hopefully that continues. And the most encouraging aspect of last night's game, Woodley, and we've all been waiting to get your thoughts on Thatcher Demko last night. He was spectacular, stopped everything he saw. He got a little bit of help from the post too, of course, but sometimes the goalies will say, well, all I gave you was the post. But as far as how he performed, how encouraging was it to see Demko flash his vintage form?
Yeah, no, and even on the post, I know one of them, I think he told Ian McIntyre that I think he got a piece of the one on the Natchez 2-on-1 with McKinnon. And listen, Makar finding posts from the point through traffic, You've heard me talk many times about what those layered screens can do if you've got a defenseman who can find the top of the net. And even in there, like a really good reactionary save off Nate MacKinnon after one of the post crossbar in the first period that Makar hit. So I feel like, and it was interesting to hear him talk about this after the game with the media in the room. I was in the Colorado room, but to sort of get the quotes for my NHL stories and listen to it then afterwards about how knowing where his game is and sometimes those results maybe aren't reflected, how he feels about his game and the results don't match up, but it doesn't change how he feels about his game. And I couldn't help but think of that Edmonton game that sort of preceded this run he's on, right? And we talked about it. Like, I felt like there were signs there of, you know, sort of what we know of the elite Thatcher Demko in that Oilers game. And who knows, maybe he's even thinking of games before that. And maybe, you know, I said I thought I recognized or saw some positive signs in his game halfway through it. Maybe it was right from the get-go, and we just couldn't see it because the chances they gave up in the first period of that game were so egregious he didn't have a chance. Regardless, it looked to me like something clicked in that game, and we were headed for better times, and it seems like that's happening here. And, you know, is it perfect? No. Even in the Nashville game, which was for the most part great, there was some times where he was going in and out of his post where he would just miss his spots. And you know, so what does that look like? Like, it's the difference between him going into a post and hitting it perfectly in the gap between his skate and the bottom of his pad and missing that and ending up with the shin of his pad on the post. And that affects your next movement and your exit off the post. And you know, there was some inconsistency there even in the Nashville game, but didn't see much of it last night. So that continues to improve. And I think, to me, the biggest thing in the Edmonton game was it just looked like he was leading with his eyes again. You know, everything leads with vision. If you start reaching body first, and that can be, you know, reads and timing and not trusting things. But once you lead with vision, he has such an exceptional skill set that it just gives you a chance all the time. And that's not just, like, I think pace comes with that. Precision and movement comes with that. All the things that we think of as Thatcher Demko being at his best. But also the ability to make some of these highlight reel saves. When he's extended, it's not in a pure desperation blocking form. Like, he's got access to pucks and access to his hands in those moments to make reactionary saves, even when he's, you know, for the most part, sprawled out. And we've seen that in the past. You know, there's one in the Edmonton game was kind of like, that was my, ooh, there it is moment, was sort of a tic-tac-toe, like backdoor down low across the crease, and he's post-to-post with precision and makes a glove save, and it's like, okay, that's the guy. Like, head first, torso goes, ice is sealed, glove stacked above the pad, or what they would call hand in support, the drills they do. It all just looked like it was getting tighter, and to hear him talk last night, he feels like that's been coming. It sounds like that was there maybe even before we recognized it, and now it's just showing up for everyone to see, and some of the results are following. And again, the key is maybe it's not a shutout last night if one of those goes post and in. But for him, the process is there and getting closer, and that's what matters. And it's a credit to him, because sometimes it's really hard to stick with that process when things aren't going well. I know a lot of goalies that will start to chase change for the sake of change when they struggle, rather than having the ability to sort of look back at the film and say, okay, I wouldn't have done anything different here. Or, okay, my game's not, I missed this spot or I missed this entry and that caused me to be late, but I continue to work on that entry, trusting that I don't have to change anything. I just need to get a little more dialed in the details, and then the next time I won't be late. So that's really tough mentally to do, especially if you're coming off a layoff like he is. And, you know, I blame myself a little bit here for having the expectations too high for his ability to overcome this, because we've seen him do it in the past, and maybe not being fair to just how hard this process is, given how much time he missed and how much grace was going to be required before we sort of saw this form of Thatcher Demko again.
So the shift last night, mid-second period, he loses his stick early on, and he makes that big save going post to post. I mean, I think maybe one of the things, like, watching it back, it's the long shift, like entire, like they're stuck in their own end for about a minute. He's going post to post numerous times as the Avs are just peppering the Canucks. I mean, how exhausted are you at the end of all that if you're Thatcher Demko and he's still able to stay engaged throughout the entirety of it? I mean, everything about it was just remarkable.
Yeah, and, you know, there were some times that there were some moments within that shift where it looked a little scrambly, but he was able to sort of collect himself and stop chasing and sort of catch up and get ahead of it a bit again. And you're right, like, goalies will tell you quite often that power plays, even if there aren't a lot of shots, are some of the toughest things for them to battle mm-hmm. because the puck is constantly moving, and every time it does, that's a push and a stop and a, you know, a push and a stop, another push and a stop, and, like, physically it just drains on you. I would argue that any time Makar and the MacKinnon line are in the offensive zone, you're probably under that level of duress. And when they start zipping it around the way they did there, it's physically taxing. It's mentally taxing. I thought Colorado, that was one of the few instances, and Bednar was all over his team post-game when I talked to him about a lack of traffic. But that was one of the instances where they were doing an effective job of trying to take away his eyes. And so he had to work for everything, probably right up until that last save on Makar. And yet, if you know Thatcher, he's probably, you know, he joked about post-game about sort of just trying to get a piece of it. And certainly the original Makar offering was a heck of a shot walking down into the slot. But he's probably looking at, like he got his glove on it. And if I catch that one cleanly, none of the rest happened. Regardless, from a mental exhaustion, physical exhaustion standpoint, a shift like that can really wear you out. So to see him sort of recompose himself within it and then make both the dynamic stop on the east-west, but then to end it with a controlled glove save, you know, off a dangerous shooter who's working off a screen into the middle of the ice and sort of end that sequence there under such control, that was as impressive as anything. A lot of guys, mm-hmm. you'll get into a mode where you get fatigued, where you'll drop your hands, and you'll go into more of a blocking mode and say, if he slides into that last Makar shot rather than controlling with the glove, yeah, you make the save, but it's off your shoulder and the play still continues. So just the ability to sort of maintain his form and his hands remaining active within all of that was, you know, one of several elements that was encouraging to see.
And last year, especially when Demko was having success, we spoke a lot about how his style of play was so well married to how the Canucks were playing as well, and how they forced, you know, they only allowed him to play half the net, protected the back door, and just allowed him to be the best version of himself. And we know the Canucks haven't been able to replicate their style of play to last year quite the same, and they are trying different things. And now with new players, it looks even more different. How is that all lining up, how the Canucks are playing and how Demko fits into all that?
Well, what's really interesting here, I'll rewind it and like less stylistically, just what they're giving up, when they're giving it up, and how challenging, how big a part of the challenge I think that has made this for him to find his game and find his confidence and his rhythm and his timing after so much time off would be, yes, they're vastly improved defensively, like over the last, like we see that the numbers are coming down in terms of what they're giving up, but they are still not nearly where they were last year when it comes to giving up chances off the rush. That's the one part that remains problematic. And so it becomes a little bit of like, not just off the rush, like high danger chances off the rush, 20th in the NHL on the season. Odd man rushes, 26th in the NHL defensively. And again, not because they're creating them and trading them, because they're 30th in terms of odd man rush for. And what makes that doubly difficult is they're giving up those high quality chances off the rush and not much else. Like we see a lot of, and last night maybe wasn't a great example, because the shot total ended up being quite high, you know, even with a four-shot third period. But there's been nights, like Lankin has been behind a few of these, where it's like 17 shots. But there's still a lot of the quality, and a lot of the quality is off the rush. And so you don't stay busy, you don't stay connected to the game, you don't feel good about your game because you're not getting a lot of easy touches in zone. But then when you do see a chance, it's grade A. And for the Canucks, a lot of that has been in the first period. And so you've got a goalie who's missed all this time, trying to find his game, trying to trust his reads, trying to trust his timing, and you're giving up all these great A's early in the game. We saw it in the Edmonton game. We saw it last night, right? Like, they only gave up 6 high danger chances in total, but, you know, we saw the ones in the first period because they're the ones that ended up going off the post. So that's been challenging in terms of not so much about his style set, but just the circumstances of him trying to come back. We've seen Lankinen do it so many times where, like, the strength has been his ability to make these great saves early in games to sort of bail them out of these slow starts and allow them to find their legs. Well, that's that much tougher for a guy who's as much time as Thatcher has. And it just, you know, just sort of adds to the complexity of an already difficult situation for him.
We're still very early in the Filip Hedl era, and we think he might be the best Canuck of all time. I don't know. Is that hyperbole? I mean, Don Taylor called him Pavel Bure earlier this week. Anyways,
he compared his debut to Bure's debut.
All right, I'm just kidding. But you know, we saw the lines change a little bit more. And last night he was with O'Connor and Besser, and that's the way they lined up at practice. Could you see something else working with Filip Hedl here, Woodley?
Well, it was interesting. We talked about the pace he played with, and, you know, I'm sure we're going to see it at some point, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that's thought it, but with that pace and with his skating, you know, I kind of wondered. And by the way, Drew O'Connor has been
really impressive
for them, too.
Yeah,
like, you know, like just, I mean, and bringing elements that, you know, we know Tocchet values and this organization values. And with all due respect, elements that we weren't seeing enough of, he brought other things, but, you know, elements that we didn't see enough of out of Danton Heinen, who goes the other way in that trade as a forward. I'm curious to see, given the speed he brings, and maybe that speed is required on Pettersson's wing, but there's a big part of me that wants to see what Hedl and Jake DeBrusk would look like in combination. And the way that, I mean, we're 2 games in here. They're doing a lot of mixing and matching and trying to figure this out as they go. And the results have been good. So when you have good results, you tend to not change them. But even yesterday, the lines changed. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we see that combination, because the combination of speed that they both bring, if nothing else, and at the risk of taking that speed off of Pettersson's line with the DeBrusk, but if nothing else, I'd like to see how those two play off each other as well, because there's a speed and skill element that, from the outside at least, looks like it could be quite complementary.
Yeah, absolutely. Now zooming
game out, looks easy from the press box, boys.
It always does, man. Honestly, like,
we're all geniuses up there.
And you know what? Like, it's the best place to watch the game because you see everything develop, but it's the worst place to watch the game because everything looks so much easier and you see so much more space and slower than it actually is. You go close and you realize how little time and space there is, so it makes it look far easier. You're absolutely right about that from the perch that we look at.
I think all of us in the media should have to go watch a game from, like, the edge of the rink every once in a while.
Yeah.
And my eye-opener on this was 10 years into my career, covering the 2010 Olympics, and the press box is no longer in level 500. The press box for the Associated Press at the time, like, we were 8 rows up center ice behind the penalty box. That's where they had the media table set up and where I watched every game of the Olympics. And I'll never forget going down for that first game. And I think it was Russia, Czech. And so it was Jager and Ovechkin. It was actually the game where I think Jager caught Ovechkin and actually broke his visor, or vice versa. And I remember asking the one with the broken visor about it afterwards, and now I'm scrambling to remember which one it was. But anyways, just seeing the size of them, those two stood out obviously in particular, but just how little room there was, you're totally right. Like, it looks so easy from up top, and you forget how fast the pace of the game and how big these guys are and how there is no time and space ever out there. And it looks like there's acres of it from the bird's eye view.
Yeah, it's really, you're right. There's such a juxtaposition between it. But I did also, you mentioned Olympics, and we're not at the Olympics yet, but the Four Nations are coming up. And obviously, we've been talking so much about goaltending for Team Canada, and, you know, especially when compared to the other nations. But there's been some issues when it comes to goalies for all the teams in the Four Nations. Like, how are you kind of sizing up the goaltending heading into the tournament?
Well, I mean, I guess we have to stop our arguments about the problems with the Canadian goaltending development system, because there are 3 Canadians currently in the top 10 of the NHL when it comes to adjusted save percentage. The challenge is they're Logan Thompson, Darcy Kemper, and Mackenzie Blackwood, and none of them are actually on Team Canada.
That's a problem.
That's a problem, and the three guys that are all negative, below expected underwater save percentages since the calendar turned to 2025. So that's a problem, too, potentially. We'll see. All it takes is one of them to sort of find their form behind, you know, let's face it, an all-star defense and an incredible group of forwards, and with a history of sort of defending first when we get together as a nation for best on best. So, listen, doesn't mean that, you know, any of those three couldn't emerge as the champion of all this, but it is kind of interesting to note that there are three, well, there are several, statistically at least, better options on the table that won't be there. You're right, though, Sat. Like, they're not alone, right? Like, you know, when I look at the top 10 adjusted save percentage numbers I just mentioned, like, Hellebuck slid to 11th, and he's the top-ranked guy in the tournament. Gustafson's 13th. Markstrom's not in it. He's 15th. Allmark is 16th, but there's question about his health and whether he's going to be involved. And, you start to go down this list. Aiden Hill's 26th in the NHL in adjusted save percentage. Jake Ottinger, as the backup, presumably, for USA, is 28th. Lankinen's 33rd in the NHL in adjusted save percentage. And that, you know, does that, where does that put him for the Finnish team, given UC Saros' struggles? He's 24th in adjusted save percentage. So yeah, the best, and this is the problem with naming your team a couple months ago. You're the best at this point of the season are not necessarily the best who were picked, at the time of the picks. And for the teams that have those question marks where there's not a surefire Connor Hellebuck, to be number one, or if we were to have a Russian team, five different guys, Shesterkin, in my mind, would be the number one. The teams that have more balance to it, you run this risk. And so it'll be fascinating to see. And I've got some calls out today to a number of guys who were involved, chatting with Ryan Miller tomorrow, hoping to catch up with Carey Price and Roberto as well for a column on the unique challenges of this, because it, like, the other best on best we've have been preseason, like mid-season change team, change system, change your expectations, best on best on a world stage spot. Like, we haven't seen it since Sochi. And so I'm kind of curious to hear what these guys have to say about how unique these challenges are, and whether there are any specifics that might fit some of the skill sets of some of these goaltenders. For example, Aiden Hill playing a more neutral positional game. Does that make it easier for him to adjust to a new system and a different team because he doesn't play around the edges of his crease? All his movements are shorter. Things like that. Connor Hellebuck's kind of in the same boat. I don't have the answers, but like a lot of people, when I look at these stats and see some of the names that are missing and some of the names that are going, I'm really fascinated to see how this all plays out. It adds another element to what should be a great tournament.
Woodley, you're the best. Thanks for joining us as always.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Kevin Woodley on Sports at 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. Got lots more to get to, including overrated, underrated. Should be a fantastic edition where I'm sure there will be no mention of Sat's blip last night on the postgame show.
What are we talking about?
I don't know.
I forgot already.
I don't know. I already forgot about it, mate.
I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Don't know what you're referring to.
Yeah, me too, mate.
Great stuff today, mate.
It's
the best. Canucks Central at Sports at 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.